Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm Ron Edwards, and this is the Ron Show. Little Time with Ron. Kind of the new name we're putting on it. Coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul for our listening audience around the country and internationally around the world. Sorry we missed the opportunity to be with you last week. We did not have the necessary positioning, if you will, and that is unfortunate. This particular program, we'd like to keep as much continuity as possible in bringing information and providing as much up-to-date information for the African-American community, because on this program, that is the most important element as it pertains to our purpose for being on the air and taking this time to be with you once again this evening. Very quickly, before we get to our prime subject matter, which is the county attorney, Mike Freeman, of Hennepin County, the county in which the city of Minneapolis is the quote-unquote county seat. History made last night in Philadelphia as Hillary Rodham Clinton becomes the first female, the first woman to be endorsed and nominated by one of the two major parties in this country. Actually, there have only been three major parties in the history of this republic. The first two were, of course, the Democrats and the Whigs. The Whigs went out of business around the 1840s. The Republicans took their spot, if you will. The Whigs never to be heard from again. And, of course, the first Republican president was, of course, Abraham Lincoln, a man driven into that position and into history by the issue of slavery, though slavery was not the only issue that led to a division of this nation, if you will, and led to the conflict. When one analyzes the Republican convention in Cleveland last week and the Democratic convention in Philadelphia over the first 2 days, three days, this is day three. Tomorrow night, now president candidate nominee Hillary Clinton will speak to the gathering, if you will, in the scepter, and so that should be much interested. Folks are finally saying that there is certainly disappointment. They were expecting that there would be some diversity in the selection. In other words, they were hoping for a Latino, Hispanic, slash African-American as the vice president. That did not happen. I'm puzzled on why people would think that it was. It was supposed to happen. There was no indication from the Clinton camp and her supporters that they were looking in that direction, though many people were extremely high on the freshman senator from New Jersey, Mr. Booker. But we know there are far too many people in this country that maintain that one of them in a 25, 30, 40-year period is enough. You know what we're saying. In other words, we really don't need any more African Americans in either the number one or number two position as it pertains to the White House and the governance of this country. That's unfortunate because that speaks volumes to the thinking and the demeanor and the philosophy of this nation, a nation which unfortunately has been divided because of race since time immemorial, if you will. In other words, from the very beginning. Again, I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron Edwards Program. And we're coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Just briefly touching on the Democratic Convention. Happy days are here again. A lot of singing and et cetera going on. Minnesota last night, front and center, as it pertains to getting the necessary notoriety with regards to Minnesota's perceived, we say that again, positioning on issues of liberalism and et cetera. Of course, for those that have been in the vineyards, if you will, have fought the battles of the civil rights struggle, such as this commentator, we know it isn't as clean-cut or as white and clean as the folks would like to want us to attempt to convince the rest of the nation that everything is honky-dory. This is a state right now in a metropolitan area that's still reeling from the death of a young African-American in a small enclave called Falcon Heights, policed by a police department out of a little larger, very predominantly white town by the name of St. Anthony, Minnesota, tucked in between St. Paul, Minneapolis, Columbia Heights, Rosedale, and et cetera. All of this becomes relevant tonight as we will, just in a couple of minutes, approach what has been another slap in the face of African-American expectations with regards to fairness and justice and et cetera. But we also want to report that our governor, Mark Dayton, is in Philadelphia and is speaking to the convention. But in the meanwhile, the governor's mansion has been under siege by a litany of supporters that do include the Black Lives Matter groups of both Minneapolis and St. Paul, the NAACP of Minneapolis and St. Paul, if you will. And there were arrests. There were about 70 as of the beginning of this program tonight here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. There are a series of meetings, by the way, going on in the municipality of St. Anthony. And then I was rather puzzled on why last night in a meeting of the St. Anthony City Council, all white, that Black Lives Matter and others did not take a strong and a very aggressive posture as they did with the occupation of the 4th Precinct here in Minneapolis, as well as some of the other actions that have emanated in both St. Paul and Minneapolis and the International Airport and et cetera. The group seemed to be extremely passive, if you will, and there's certainly been no storming of the St. Anthony City Hall and the police department, which is attached to it, if you will, nor has there been any disruption inside of the municipality of St. Anthony. And it is kind of some significant political interest of why the concentration in front of the governor's mansion. I mean, the governor spoke out firmly and decisively and et cetera when Mr. Castile was shot and killed by a St. Anthony police officer that was captured on video and went viral, as they said, and has been seen by millions and millions and millions of individuals across the country ever since that event in the first week of July. But we are trying to understand what the new strategy is. I assume there is a strategy with regards to a event, which, by the way, is the third one in recent time here in the state of Minnesota. The first was Terrence Franklin, who no one even talks about, doesn't even ask about, and et cetera, which may come to trial in 2017, which means it took 2 years in a federal court, too, to finally get a trial date per se. We understand, as we have reported before on our television programs and in our newspaper columns, that they apparently, the attorneys for the family in the civil suit, say that they will be trial ready, you know, by November, if you will. I don't know that November is a good time, but then later in conversations with the attorney of record for the Mr. Patton, I indicated that he merely was saying they'd be trial ready, but that they may not have a date for the trial involving our the deaf in a basement in a home on the south side of Minneapolis, in which Mr. Franklin was blown away. At least three-fourths of his head was blown away from his body, and et cetera. But anyways, they are saying that there should be a trial on that. And, of course, we all know the circumstances surrounding the death of Jamar Clark, which for a while was the engine, quote-unquote, that drove the concern and outrage and et cetera. And then when it came time to produce, and there's a reason for these narratives that we're giving, when it came time to produce witnesses, videos, and et cetera, we as a community fell flat on our face and basically produced nothing. Certainly none of the forensic evidence, such as videos and et cetera, that folks were saying on that morning of 15 November 2015 that was in existence. Between the BCA and the FBI, they did a pretty nice job. Mike Freeman, the county attorney for Hennepin County, the county in which Mr. Clark was shot and killed by police, had no problem going early. He went in March, you know, said, hey, nothing to it. There's no evidence. Forensic evidence seriously outweighs any wrongdoing by the police officers and et cetera. And then, you know, proceeded to kind of malign Mr. Clark and members of his family, really, which, you know, wasn't really necessary. You know, I mean, the arrangements had already been made, the deals had been cut, a nice piece of money had been made off of the memory of Mr. Clark by those who said they are part of the civil rights movement. Some are maintaining in excess of $100,000. And so one kind of wondered, you know, what was the real expectation of in the matter of Jamar Clark, if you will. And now we have Mr. Castile, and so we have two in the city of Minneapolis, one in, well, Ramsey County, and in the municipality of Falcon Heights, if you will, by a St. Anthony police officer. Now, that brings us over the next 15 minutes to a couple of questions that have to be raised, because I have said to some of the folks that I talk to and try to get a feeling for what they are thinking as both a journalist and a historian, this is something that I like to do. I find it necessary to do. I think it's extremely important, particularly in that we have no institution which will record the history of the African-American community other than the white-controlled, white-dominated Minnesota Historical Society. I mean, nothing against them. They have served well. Their mission statement, if you will, what their mission is basically to promote and to reflect on the migration, number one, and into the growth of the state of Minnesota by white immigrants, if you will. Even though African Americans had had a presence in Minnesota before Minnesota was even a territory, if you will. In fact, one of the chief individuals of the surveying team that came from Canada, the Hudson Bay Company, one of the chief surveyors was a Afro-Canadian, if you will, by way of Quebec. That particular black man's name is still very prominent in northern Minnesota, particularly amongst some of our Native American brothers and sisters as it pertains to the life of that African-American, actually Afro-Canadian, because he was a citizen of Canada, if you will. Bongo was his name, for those of you in our international and domestic audience. There's a small piece in the Minnesota Historical Society, a picture, if you will, of him, and then a caption at the bottom of the picture that talks about that Mr. Bongo was involved with the first surveying team. In fact, the purpose of the surveying team was to establish the international boundaries and international border between the United States and Canada. And for whatever purpose, they spent quite a bit of time along what now is the Minnesota, Manitoba, and Ontario border space. But Bongo contributed greatly to the shaping of what is now referred to as the state of Minnesota, yet there is really very little that is said. In fact, our Native American brothers have a tendency to spend more time educating us, if you will, about this great black man, if you will, Afro-Canadian from Quebec, if you will, working for the Hudson Bay Company. I've tested people periodically and asked about that, and they don't have a clue who you're talking about and what you're talking about. In fact, some of them are professors of history and et cetera. You would think that they would know and understand the history, quote-unquote, of African-Americans, Afro-Canadians, if you will, and et cetera, but they don't. Now, that then brings us to the situation with the power of the county attorney, Mr. Freeman. Mr. Freeman clearly sent a message, and there's been much discussion within the white/Caucasian community. In fact, many of our leaders in the African-American community tend to shy away from even admitting and recognizing the fact that there is snickering that has been going on for quite some time. Andy Lugar, the U.S. attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, was a little bit more kinder to us, if you will. Maybe it's a part of the role and the job that his wife has as the head of the General Mills Foundation. In fact, his wife right now as we speak is a delegate, super delegate, I do believe, along with people like Congressman Ellison and Senators Franken and Klobuchar in the convention in Philadelphia. But all of this is important to the intimidation. I mean, I did not really want to believe that it had reached that point here, and that's really what this program tonight, the remainder of this program, will be about. Now, I don't know that we can shame our leadership and community. You know, I know that there was a lot of national and international attention provided for the death, the tragic death, very, very tragic death of Mr. Castile. But the last time I looked, all lives matter, and definitely all black lives matter, and particularly when the other victim is a 2-year-old child, and we must also remember his 15-month-old sister was also wounded in that shooting in North Minneapolis, in which two vehicles exchanged gunfire, and that 2-year-old child, Avante, died on the table inside of the ER, if you will, the emergency room at North Memorial Hospital here in the city of Robbinsdale, which is actually right adjacent to North Minneapolis. I was concerned as a historian and then certainly as a journalist, activist, and et cetera, with how dismissive in many respects that we seem to have been, with the exception of V.J. Smith, who was at the scene that afternoon, played a very significant role in helping to stabilize the situation, K.G. Wilson, if you will, and the Reverend Brian Heron. But after it was quite clear that the 2-year-old child was deceased, if you will, his 15-month-old sister was going to recover, folks talked in terms of rallies and et cetera. I don't know that the numbers were very sufficient, but it appeared that the tragedy, the death, the murder of the 2-year-old baby became insignificant. In fact, there are some out there that went to the funeral of the 2-year-old, which was a couple of days after the funeral of Mr. Castile, which was a most celebrated memorial, if you will, taking place at the great Catholic Cathedral of St. Paul in St. Paul, if you will, close to probably 2,000 people in attendance. National, international attention, a horse-drawn carriage, if you will, with the body of Mr. Castile in a beautiful white casket and et cetera. And then a couple of days later, the funeral of a two-year-old baby gunned down who never had really even began to live, if you will. Mr. Castile, who was 32 at the time of his death, had certainly been able to enjoy aspects of life. Had a chance to make his mark, if you will. I was bothered then, and on my television program and in my newspaper column, I expressed concern about the kind of dismissive attitude that was on display. All the attention, of course, was in St. Paul. CNN and MSNBC and CBS and everybody else had come once again, as they did after Jamar Clark's tragic death, if you will, again on 15 November 2015. And once again, though, it was puzzling on how quickly we seem to, on this side of the river, dismiss the importance, the relevance, and the what should have been equal concern, if you will, maybe even more so because of the youth, the age of the baby, if you will, 2 years of age, and the wounding of his sister, who may never recover from that dramatic experience. She was, in fact, his sister was sitting as close to her brother, who was to die right there, as, of course, Diamond was, Diamond Reynolds was, in that video that captured the imagination of an entire planet. And so it was, it was a scenario that, you know, that had so much consistency and continuity of action and death and heartache and et cetera. And so when the police Thursday of last week made the arrest of a man who they felt they had clearly identified and had prepared the necessary evidence to arrest and to ultimately wait for the county attorney to charge. That's the role of the county attorney as the chief prosecutor. That one felt that certainly there was a God in heaven and there was certainly a action, an emotional and spiritual action taking place, that there would be justice for this young two-year-old child, if you will. And so when the suspect was apprehended in a small city called St. Cloud, Minnesota, just north of the Twin Cities, maybe, I don't know, 60 miles, 70 miles, folks said, okay, all right, you know, we know we're, you know, critical of the police and et cetera, and think that they are not concerned about a black life and et cetera. But under the leadership of the commander of their unit, Lieutenant Zimmerman, and with the consistent departmental pressure to Chief Janae Harto and Assistant Chief Chris Arneson, who were as passionate as anyone that I could remember inside of that emergency room on the occasion of the death of this two-year-old child, if you will, in a quote-unquote exchange of gunfire between individuals that had some kind of score to settle with each other, if you will. This baby had not offended anyone. In fact, we had said on our television program here in the Twin Cities that when students from Lucy Laney Grade School, under the auspices of their principal, an African-American woman who clearly was moved emotionally, spiritually, even maybe politically, you know, to have her children walk that two blocks from their school to the site of the shooting of Avante, if you will. some of the children had asked an interesting question. We talked about it again on our television program over a week ago, and they said, what had he done to make someone so mad and so angry at him that they would shoot and kill him? And I thought that that was a very profound, profound, profound question posed by the youngest of us, if you will. I thought that it had such a profound impact, if you will. It was compelling. It was deep. It was the kind of thing that would make grown-ups proud of what it was the children were thinking about, if you will. Again, that particular question by some of the young students at Lucy Laney Grade School here in the area, if you will. We are receiving some calls on our sales and et cetera. We are hoping that, and we were hoping, as time moves toward the top of the hour, that certainly charges would be made, charged with second-degree murder, if you will, opportunity to take him for a grand jury. You cannot believe how shocked this commentator and historian was a couple of days ago, Monday, when County Attorney Mike Freeman and his deputies and et cetera said there wasn't enough evidence to, quote-unquote, take an action to charge Mr. Walsh, the individual who was apprehended after moving back and forth across the country, which is interesting because if one did not have anything to do in any shape, form, or fashion, including being an accessory both before and after the fact. By the way, that's a key legal element, accessory, if you will. We could never quite understand why Mr. Walsh had fled. Why had he took off? And then why had he came back and attempted to take safety, if you will, in the quote-unquote home facility of a young lady who was identified as his girlfriend, which led to a task force of St. Cloud City Police, Stearns County Sheriff's deputies, if you will, the Minneapolis Police Department and the BCA and the FBI, United States Marshals specifically, to knock down the door and apprehend the individual. And now I'm hearing the county attorney, Mr. Freeman, a man of obviously significant power and fear that he has instilled in my community and amongst my leadership, indicate there wasn't enough and set this man free. Now, you got to understand, based on the tragedy and the history as it pertains to the individuals that were exchanging gunfire with each other, and certainly none of them was the two-year-old, okay, is that one has to assume that one of the individuals is a dead man walking. I mean, let's be very candid and concise about this. And yet, here it is Wednesday in our beloved Shangri-La, and I've not heard a single voice of power, you know, because our leaders always tell us that they are here to represent and speak for the masses of people. And, you know, most of us are considered to be too ignorant to know how to ask the right kinds of questions, legally or otherwise. But no one has asked the question of the powerful, powerful county attorney on what it is that was lacking. Now, we are aware, we are saying it, is that the county attorney gave the Minneapolis Police Department, the MPD, a shopping list of things that they needed to do in order to consolidate the necessary charges that may be asked for as it pertains to the individual that was identified as the actual shooter. In fact, no one, and the Minneapolis Star Tribune has really been scandalous with regards to how it has played this down, if you will, and really not spent any time analyzing what the heck has happened here. because there is the whole question of the guns that were involved. There are rumors and statements now being made because there are some angry folks also within law enforcement about this at a time when relationships are not good between communities of color and law enforcement. And the detectives, the investigators who really, you know, broke their backs to identify this individual and to help track him, if you will, intercept electronic communications and et cetera, if you will, and arrest him and bring him to what they thought to justice, that they themselves cannot understand what is happening other than the political war that has been going on between the city of Minneapolis and its basically female leadership, Council President Barb Johnson, if you will, Mayor Betsy Hodges, Chief Janae Harto, if you will think about it, and the good old boys across the street, if you will, in the county attorney's office, the sheriff's department, if you will, even our friend in the U.S. attorney's office, deciding that they're going to teach the little girls how politics is played. Now, that's all well and good if they want to play that kind of game, but my friends, please, please, not on the tragic back of a two-year-old African-American child, an innocent caught in the crossfire, if you will, of individuals who were settling some kind of dispute in which this two-year-old child and his 15-month-old sister didn't have anything to do with, about. They did not anger anybody, as the children from Lucy Laney said. What was it? What was it that this two-year-old baby and his 15-month-old sister could have done to so angered folks that they were shot? Now, I have a theory. You know, that's what this is all about, theories. I don't think that the gunman in that dark colored car seen on those videos and et cetera, I don't think they realized that those two babies were in the back seat of that caravan, SUV, if you will. I just don't think that they would have been mean-spirited enough to open fire. But now people are saying that the previous day there had been an exchange of gunfire and that the individuals who were on the other end of the ambush had maintained that they had children in their car. I don't know the validity of that, my friends, but one has to certainly be concerned, very, very concerned, that this has happened. But we have to also be concerned that we have become so silent and so cowardly. As we were saying, as we were moving to the top of the hour, and we'll apparently be moving into the 9:30 time, if you will, that I just cannot envision, and I've already, as I said, seen a call from our a caller, and unfortunately we are, because of the technical requirements and et cetera, we are not able to receive phone calls. We are able to receive text messages, and if the person who you know who you are, who called me from the 823 number, wishes to text me at the same number that you called me, or any others that are there, feel free to text me any questions you may have that makes sense and that is relevant to this discussion, the action or the inaction of the powerful, powerful county prosecutor, Mr. Michael Freeman, and his staff. Because I just don't hear the questions, and I have to assume, as a veteran, a longtime veteran of the civil rights struggle, that when folks don't ask questions, if you will, of men or women of such power and such stature, if you will, is that they are intimidated. They are scared that they have been bullied, if you will. And they have been basically had conveyed to them, you know, openly or telepathically or however it is done, that they are not to question the decision of the master, if you will. Now, that's called plantation politics. Oh, I know some folks say, man, this Negro here is must have gone crazy. You can't talk about the big white prosecutor, county attorney, prosecutor. You can't talk like that, colored boy. Well, maybe that's the problem, that maybe more of us need to stand up and talk about something, because here's the thing that has happened. And I know that it can be identified as a reflection of arrogance, if you will, but if it is amongst some folks, then so be it. This child, this 2-year-old child and his 15-month-old sister deserve to have a voice speaking for them. And I look around me at those that say they are leaders and those that are funded to be leaders, if you will, and spokespersons for the African-American community, for the sons and daughters of the African, and there's nothing but silence. And so I must reach a determination in my own limited mind as a black man who has been here for a long, long time, that my leaders, and by extension, my people, my community, are intimidated by this county attorney. That Michael Freeman has sent a message based on how he handled the Clark case and other cases, if you will, and based on the fact that they have been criticized about losing a homicide case in which a individual shot and killed 2 persons last summer, the summer of 2015 in South Minneapolis, and then the cases were bungled, if you will, and a jury decided that it really did not feel it was necessary to find a guilty plea because the 2 victims were people of color, one Hispanic Latino, the other a Somali. That's not right, my friends. We used to talk in the day, as folks like to say, about justice for all, the importance of justice for everybody. That's really what it's all about. And when we reach a place where we don't even have the toughness, if you will, the compassion, the passion, the concern to be the voice for a 2-year-old child and his 15-month-old daughter, man, there's something wrong. And we are obviously nowhere as tough as we like to convey. I mean, I cannot reach any other conclusion. And for our national and international audience, I have been a resident of this city and this county and this state since 1945. So I have seen all of the major issues of the day that one can speak to as a person that was there, lived and breathed. The politics and the emotion and the pain, if you will, and maybe sometimes the glee, and really sometimes the voice and the sounds of victory. But I feel tonight, my friends, in this broadcast, that we have forsaken the importance of standing for the least of our people. And just as it was with Miss Beeks, in which there's been no movement, no one has come forward, everybody seems to be terrified. Now, the county attorney and his staff have not insisted, quote unquote, which is interesting, and this is somewhat inconsistent with a situation which was tremendously tragic last year, in which Miss Spiller was brutally, brutally murdered in her home on the far end of North Minneapolis. People talked in terms of demanding and et cetera, and it's interesting that just in the last 5 days, the Minneapolis Star Tribune positioned a article talking in terms of anybody have any knowledge of this crime and et cetera. That's great. One who seeks and, quote-unquote, is concerned with the success of the quest for justice, that is capital. That is important. That is what we want, if you will. But you see, Miss Spiller, and even to a lesser degree, the heirs and loved ones of Miss Beeks, particularly her daughters, have spoken out and have written in a very eloquent manner and appealing to a community to come forward and to allow their mother, their grandmother, their aunt, their cousin, and etc. to begin to rest in peace, if you will. Just as we're all concerned about Miss Spiller, and that she and her spirit and her soul be able to rest in peace. Killer being at least identified and all of the facts made known to her loved ones and to the general public. And so should we not tonight have the right to have considered that the big, powerful county attorney and his staff would have some small piece of that same compassion and desire and quest for justice in the case of a 2-year-old child? The question tonight in this city becomes who speaks and who will speak for this 2-year-old baby and his 15-month-old sister. One must live with the agony and the fear of those gunshots and feeling and seeing as she spoke to him very quietly and calmly that he was already gone. Who is it that will provide some sense of comfort for that 15-month-old little girl who would be made to understand in 14 or 15 or 16 years that there was a sincere, and I repeat this again, there was a sincere pursuit and quest for justice on behalf of her brother and herself, because she, too, was a victim of the violence. But it is the spirit and the soul of that 2-year-old baby that should concern us, particularly all of the folks who talk in terms that they have embraced Jesus Christ and they have embraced the Lord and they have embraced all those things that are important and pure as it pertains to the life of a human being. I ask myself tonight in preparation for this program, what is it that is delaying us? Why have our leaders not marched on the government center and gone up to the office of the powerful county attorney, the chief prosecutor for the county of Hennepin in the state of Minnesota? Why has this not happened? Why have not some of our female leadership, those who are in significant positions of power and authority, if you will, why have they not asked for a meeting with the county attorney? They have a right. This man is not so powerful and omnipotent, if you will, that he does not have to answer. But maybe I am wrong. Maybe it's business as usual. Maybe this has become the period of an America that operated on what was called the Black Codes. Maybe this is a return to the decision of the United States Supreme Court in a case which actually came out of Minnesota when Judge Taney indicated that there were no rights that a Negro had, that a white person had to be concerned with and had to have any respect for and certainly would be required to provide humanity to that race and group of people. Justice Taney, he said it in a number of ways in his landmark decision with regards to the rights of the Negro. But at least in the case of Dred Scott and et cetera, they had lawyers and et cetera to speak for them. I have realized, though it has not been difficult to realize it, as we are seeing it happen all across the country and et cetera, I realize that there is no one stepping up to the plate to speak on behalf of this child and his 15-month-old sister there's no one bold enough to march into the government center and to go up to the offices of the county attorney, Mr. Freeman, a powerful, powerful man, a man who made a decision that there was not enough evidence, that not enough material evidence, forensic and otherwise, had been brought so that his prosecutors could charge. And come on. The Star Tribune makes it a point to stay away from asking the tough questions. If a quote-unquote older black man such as myself at age 77 can ask these questions, and I am not a learned man. You know, I do not have quote-unquote the great background, the omnipotence of those who say that they are your leaders. They speak for you. They will be able to move mountains and redirect rivers and change the colors of the skies. That is a passage, my brothers and sisters, from our brothers, the true indigenous people of America, the Native Americans. And I'm going to, over the next 14 minutes, I'm just going to hammer at this particular question. And again, the text messages, for those that know the number, my phone is awaiting any text message that any of you want to send. And you want to ask the question, or you feel that there's a question that needs to be asked. My God, in the name of justice for this 2-year-old baby and his 15-month-old sister and the agony that their mother and loved ones are going through, should we not have some questions of this powerful white man? This man who sits elected by the masses and a majority of the voters as the chief prosecutor for this county, if you will, do we not have, quote-unquote, an obligation in the name of justice and in allowing peace and final eternal rest for this 2-year-old baby? Or will we see a game played? The suspect disappears because the suspect knows that he's a dead man walking. That the prosecutor maintains that the Minneapolis Police Department did not bring forward enough evidence. I cannot in good conscience, as I said on my television program to air this Sunday, I cannot in good conscience play that kind of game. The men and women of the homicide unit worked tirelessly, working also with federal authorities and other authorities, both in southern Florida, and then as they monitor the suspect as he returned here to Minnesota. I just cannot understand what it is that prohibits us from being able to at least ask the question. I mean, you know, one can put on their best clothes, if you will, your best dresses, your best suits, if you will, and if brothers want to come in to the great man's office with their hats in their hands and you know, just don't shuffle too much, but, you know, if that's what it is, if you're concerned and scared, if you will, set aside your fear. Set aside your fear tonight in the quest for justice. Not only for a 2-year-old who has left this life and his 15-month-old sister, but for all future children. Because at some point or another, just as those babies from Lucy Laney asked, standing around the memorial site of where a 2-year-old child was in the process of losing his life, they asked the question, what was it that this baby did that so angered grown-ups, those of us who represent the epitome, if you will, of understanding and intellect and et cetera? What was it that this baby did that his life should be taken? And so in the course of that, my friends, on this program tonight, I would think that it would not be necessary for us on a Wednesday to be asking the question, Mr. County Attorney, Mr. Prosecutor. If you got to call him Mr. Boss Man, I mean, you know, set aside, quote unquote, your concern about how you'll be received and think how the spirit of this 2-year-old baby would feel some degree of comfort and a sense that they are people who are concerned about what happened to the body that this spirit is still a part of. Do we have, my friends, tonight in Hennepin County, do we have the constitutional commitment? Do we have the strength to ask this powerful white man if he can explain? He was able to explain infinitum, everything about why Jamar Clark was a bad person and really probably deserved to die. You know, I mean, the man was eloquent, I mean, at least in his own mind, if you will, as the county attorney, about making us poor, not understanding, not too bright, not too intelligent African Americans and supporters that, you know, the actions were justified in the discussion. And a month later, the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota said, I concur, end of discussion, if you will. Even though not all witnesses were talked to, not all witnesses' statements initially appeared in the quote-unquote judicial record. Oh, yes, yes, yes. We go back to that whole situation with a man by the name of Jerome Copeland, probably the most important person, saw everything and gave one hell of a statement to the authorities. Never called, never re-interviewed, never nothing, okay? The MPD did not do that, though now they are being asked and demanded of them that all of these specific things need to be done. Well, why is it that someone in our communities of leadership, ecumenical or otherwise, in a closed-door session, could at least ask the county attorney, this powerful, powerful man, what is it that was absent from the examination of the evidence against Mr. Walsh? What was it that needed to be known? What was it that needed to be put into play that would have allowed you, sir? I mean, I understand the importance of speaking in the right tone to the boss man, to the master. I mean, I understand that. I'm a 77-year-old African-American. I know the history of my beloved nation, and I sure in hell know the history that my beloved people have had to go through. And so I understand. But we cannot even do the minimal at this particular point. I mean, that's the minimal. Every citizen, particularly those of you who are voters, and those of you who vote the Democratic ticket and gave Mike Freeman your vote when he last ran for county attorney. Those of you that maintain that you have connections with the boss man and that you walk with white power and et cetera, you yourselves, a phone call, if you will. You know, maybe a drink at a night spot with the county attorney. Say, can we just ask you, sir, on the record, can we ask you to have the same kind of press conference that you had when you made the announcement relevant to the disposition in the matter of Jamar Clark? Can we just ask you to tell us what it is that was absent from the protocol that is required under color of law that could have allowed you to at least charge this man with second-degree murder? And any others that were with him and conspired with him or aided and abetted in circumstances and situations that led to the death and act of what is now going to become prior bad act. I mean, at what point is it so tough, my friends, in the last 5 minutes of tonight's program? What is it that so terrifies us? I mean, we talk tough when we're in the clubs and we're in our private settings and our barbecues and et cetera about what we will do and how we will do it to Massa. And yet when the opportunity presents itself, in this particular case, in the interest and to lay to rest the spirit and to provide peace to the soul of a two-year-old child, we cannot get our thoughts together. We don't seem to have that tenaciousness. Maybe that's not the right word, but we don't seem to have that tenaciousness. We sure don't have that anger to ask this chief prosecutor, chief law enforcement officer, who tried to set the political agenda to place elected political and appointed political leaders against each other. As I said earlier, I cannot in good conscience listen to the rhetoric that the MPD did not do the best that they could have done. Fine. So what was that? Let me say this. If, in fact, a decision is made at some point in time in life that the individual first arrested in St. Cloud, Minnesota, after returning here from the southern part of the United States, is going to be charged with a capital crime, if he's got any kind of lawyer worth his salt, the first thing the lawyer is going to go to talking about when he opens his preamble with the jury is that there was indecision in arresting my client. In fact, my friends, one of the discussions that is going on now, and it makes you wonder, who is this individual, Mr. Walsh? I mean, what is really his history? Because the county attorney a week ago, tomorrow, did not want the authorities to arrest this individual. That's correct. That's right. And there's some of those of you out there in the legal system that know this is correct. You know what is going on. You talk to, quote unquote, your colored friends and others in positions of power. You know that for some reason they did not even want to arrest this man, and they became angry and upset with the MPD when they did what they were charged and are under color of law responsible to do. Can't you imagine what would happen later on down the line, particularly if something happens to this individual or he disappears never to be seen again for 9, 10, 12, 15 years? Don't you imagine how angry and hostile we would become as a community if the Star Tribune or one of them said, yes, the police had evidence enough to have executed an entry, a warrant, and arrested the suspect, but they didn't do it. Oh, my God. My God. If Betsy Hodges was still mayor when this revealed itself, she'd be asked to resign. Janae Harto would be asked to be brought before a grand jury. And all the members of the investigative team of the Minneapolis Police Homicide Unit would be charged with mal and nonfeasance in office, and people would be talking about throwing him in jail. We'd be marching in the streets and et cetera. Yes, we would. Yes, we would. Come on. Let's be upfront with each other as we move into the last couple of minutes of tonight's program. But in the last minute and a half, the most important aspect of this entire narrative, my friends, is that this two-year-old child, precious, 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 deserves all that we can do as those who say they are concerned about justice, and most importantly, who are concerned about allowing his soul to rest in peace and to let it be known to the highest spirits of all that there was enough concern about this two-year-old black baby, this child, that every effort would be made to provide him and his sister and his family and his loved ones with justice. Failure to do that shows just how much of a coward we have become as a community. God bless us all, and thank you for tuning in and listening to this narrative. On behalf of the two-year-old child, may God continue to rest his hand upon this baby's shoulder as he brings him and has already entered him into heaven. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron Edwards Program.